This episode is brought to you by Ursa Minor Outfitters. Folks, I'm absolutely in love with my Loon mug. It's handmade. It's an absolute piece of art. Whether it's at the office or at the house, people keep asking to check it out. If you're not a Loon fan, they also have other beautiful mugs for wildlife fans of moose, bears, and eagles. They specialize in products highlighting the outdoors and local pride through quality design by local artists. They've even started expanding into items beyond mugs, like apparel, dog accessories, and soon candles and more. They also try to partner and highlight other small businesses, and in some cases, forgo profits in lieu of charitable giving to help their community, such as the dog rescue. So check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for our four-legged hiking partners, they also have a portable silicone dog bowl and also a sweet over-the-collar dog bandana. Go check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and don't forget to enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Welcome everyone to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm your host, Ivan, and together we'll embark on a weekly journey connecting with extraordinary hikers from all corners of the U.S. and beyond. As the cool and colorful embrace of fall envelops the Northern Hemisphere, we've had the privilege of conversing with remarkable individuals throughout this season. Their experiences and adventures will leave you yearning to hit the trails. And in today's episode, we're talking to our first guest from Ohio. His name is Bob, otherwise known as John's Dad on the Trail. And you can follow him on Instagram at John's Dad Hikes. That's JonsDadHikes. John's dad shares with us some of his favorite places in and around Ohio. We also hear about his incredible backpacking experiences on the King's Trail in Sweden and the Alaskan wilderness. He also shares with us a solid tip on what he packs for a little extra kick to his backpacking meals. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode with our guest, Bob. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm really excited to be talking to our upcoming guest today. He's the first hiker from Ohio that we've had on the podcast, so I'm really excited to learn and hear what Ohio's hiking scene is like. His name is Bob, otherwise known as John's Dad on YouTube and on Instagram. Thank you so much, Bob, for coming on the podcast. You know, our first question that we always like to ask our guests is how long they've been hiking for and how they got started hiking.
Well, man, that goes all the way back to the 60s. I was in Scouts, late 60s, and we went backpacking and camping every month of the year. And I grew up in Wisconsin. And so we did some pretty hardy camping on snow and cold. And for some reason, I enjoyed that. I don't know why I did, but I did. And it even at the end of my scouting up there, we did a hike of the full Isle Royale National Park. That was the capstone event for our troop. And so that's where I got started, kept going into, did car camping and stuff while I was in college and the professional life after that. Now, when my son got into Scouts back in about 2010, we joined a backpacking troop. And that was the focus of the troop, tend to be backpacking. And as I got to know the leaders more, yeah, they were heavy duty backpackers. They really, the adults enjoyed it. And so I got into that and upgraded my equipment. My sleeping bag weighed 10 pounds, not an exaggeration. It was 10 pounds, but I stayed warm in the wintertime. It was a good sleeping bag. Yeah. It weighed 10 pounds. All of that stuff needed to be upgraded. And back in about 2016, we offered to the scout troop, my son's scout troop, that we do a week on the Appalachian Trail as summer camp. Just, I mean, think all the merit badges they could get done, you know, backpacking and cooking and hiking and first aid, 50 miler award, all that kind of stuff. And the scouts declined. They wanted to do something else, which we were all disappointed as we're standing around bummed out. Somebody said, let's do it anyway. So in 2016, we formed a group of adults who want to go backpacking, and we picked to go backpacking on the Appalachian Trail 1 week of summer, and about 20-something people that have rotated through over time, and as low as I think 6 people and as high as 14 have gone on a single year. And we pick a different section, and we arrange all the logistics for starting and ending and the food, and we're having a blast doing it. And then when I retired back in about 2018, I went to work for REI, selling stuff on the floor, but also teaching classes. And just a total blast. somehow backpacking has just become, you know, what I like to do.
And, you know, one of our previous guests from season three briefly talked about hiking in Wisconsin. She was there visiting for a short period of time. How would you describe? That was Anna from the season three premiere.
Okay. And then I maybe didn't hear her. But no, because I grew up in Wisconsin. We did all of our camping and stuff down near the border with Illinois. That's where I grew up. Went up to Devil's Lake State Park and that area up by Baraboo, up north of Madison, up to Door County Peninsula. That's a little finger. On a podcast, you can't see it, but holding my hand up, the little finger that sticks out into Lake Michigan, that's Door County. It's a fantastic area. Peninsula State Park is up there. And our scout camp was way up north where we would go up for a week or so every summer. We did that, I don't know, 4 or 5 times I went up to that. And so, yeah, Wisconsin is absolutely beautiful. Lots of nature, lots of water.
You know, I think the West and the East Coast gets a lot of attention for hiking and the outdoors. But through this podcast, I've learned that, you know, Middle America has some amazing hiking opportunities from, you know, Texas all the way up to Wisconsin and Michigan, and all having some really unique landscapes that are vastly different. Now, Bob, right now you're based out of Ohio, and like we mentioned at the start of the podcast, you're the first guest from Ohio. I was hoping you could share a little bit with us what it's like hiking in and around Ohio.
I hate to say too many good things because then people are going to start coming here. But it's actually from where I live near Columbus, it's 2 hours to the border of Ohio in any direction. And so up in the north, we have Cuyahoga National Park, which has got great hiking up there. They don't have any camping in the park itself. Great hiking trails. Down to the southeast, kind of, there's Wayne National Forest. That area of the state is actually the foothills for the Appalachians. So the northwest part of the state is really kind of flat. It looks a lot like Indiana, Illinois, maybe Kansas. Real, you know, not exactly flat, but pretty flat. The southeast corner of the state starts getting hilly, but it's not real difficult. It's not like doing the roller coaster on the Appalachian Trail where you go for 2,000 feet up and then 2,000 feet down. You go for a couple hundred feet up, a couple hundred feet down. Maybe it levels off for a while. So you have some good hiking, but it's not hard. A person with a little bit of experience, experience, it's not a bad place to get started. So Ohio is so beautiful. One of the state forests here has called water buffaloes, I think, actually sunk in the ground. So when you get to a campsite, you go over and drain water and you've got drinkable water. You don't have to treat it, filter it, nothing.
Wow.
It's really sweet.
And do you have any favorite local trails and destinations, especially, you know, as we're going into the fall season?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, the colors change here a little bit later than in Wisconsin, about 2-3 weeks later. But Mohican State Forest, north of Columbus, about an hour or so. They've got some great trails up there. They're all well marked. They even, right now it's on hold because a tornado came through, but they have some pack, what do they call it? Park and pack campsites. You come and park, and then you backpack in someplace under a mile, usually more a quarter mile, into a backpacking campsite. But a tornado went through and it knocked a whole bunch of trees down, so they're closed right now. But that is one of my favorites. South of Columbus, about an hour and a half or so, is Alesky State Forest. And that's beautiful. I forget how many miles of trails are there. It would take you a 3 or 4 day weekend to hike them all. And that's where they've got the water, buffaloes underwater or underground, and a lot of views. It's a really beautiful lake. As you come down one trail, you can just see this whole lake, and you actually come right down to the edge of the lake. Every year we stop and take pictures from that same spot, even though it's the same as it was last year. It's just so beautiful.
With the fall colors, do you get the explosion of oranges, reds, and yellows like the East Coast is known for?
Oh, for sure. We do have some coniferous trees too, but all of those colors just explode, and they're just beautiful. Not, they haven't started yet, but in about a month, we'll start seeing them.
With the fall hiking season upon us, that means winter isn't too far behind. What's the winter hiking like in and around Ohio?
Well, this AT hiking group that I'm part of, I'm just so lucky to be part of this group. We do the week on the AT in the summer. In the fall, we do a 3-day trip someplace in the area, someplace Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Columbus area. The spring, we do the same thing. In the winter, we do a one night. And February, we go camping someplace. And it gets cold. Your water bottles will freeze at night. Mm-hmm. So you do have to put them in your sleeping bag, that kind of thing. And there usually isn't a lot of snow here. Up near Lake Erie, they get snow. That's all lake effect. They'll get feet and feet of snow up there. But here, when we get snow, maybe we have 6 inches or less. So you can set up your tent real easy almost anywhere. and the ground might be frozen, but is that, you know, that's not that big of a deal. You set up your tent, and if it's self-standing, you're okay. And we create our fire, you know, build a fire, sit around, talk dumb, and just have a blast. Hike the trails during the day. Last year, there was some ice on the trail, and the people who had the micro spikes, they did better than guys like me who just came with their boots. There's something I need to get micro spikes for this next winter. That's the piece of equipment I'm missing.
Do you guys get enough snow up in the winter where you could snowshoe certain trails?
Not here, but north of here you could. The local REI started renting snowshoes, but they're not around here. In the snow that we do get, you can just hike with your boots. It's not that much snow. But if you go up further north, then you're going to need the snowshoes or skis.
You know, you've mentioned section hiking the Appalachian Trail and how that kind of got started with the Scouts. How's that experience been section hiking the AT? And do you know how many sections you approximately have left?
Unrelated, I just got back from Shenandoah National Park a couple days ago. And so I've got a map that I mark and I mark when I did each little part. And I added up my mileage and I've done 671 miles of the AT.
Nice.
And this is starting back in 2014 is when I did my very first section. So I've got third, a quarter, or something like that done. Most of it is in the south. The furthest north I've got is in the Whites, which was only a 5 mile mistake. That would be one piece of advice. Don't start your AT experience in the White Mountains. And that's what I did. It did not work well.
Yeah. Did you end up having to cross off a couple of the 48s?
Well, we got up to Madison and realized that this was a gross mistake. We're in overhead. I weighed 50 or 60 pounds more than I do today. I was not physically right and didn't have the right experience. And so we talked to the people at the hut up in Madison and said, help us out of this. And we got out the maps and figured out a way we could get down that was safe. And they redid our reservations for us and arranged a shuttle for us. They were just great.
You know, outside of the AT, you've done sections of the PCT, but you've also done some incredible hikes, not just in the States, but also abroad. And some of these have been previously mentioned on the podcast by previous guests, but I'd like to get your experience on, you know, the Ice Age Trail, the King's Trail, and Dolly Sods.
The Ice Age Trail's up in Wisconsin. It's shaped kind of like a U. It kind of goes from the Minneapolis side all the way down almost to the border with Illinois, then back up, ends up by Green Bay, 1,000 miles. And I've only done 3 or 4 section hikes, day hikes on them. I haven't actually camped on the Ice Age Trail yet, but that's where I'm from. My roots are there. My grandkids live there. I got them on a section of the Ice Age Trail one day too. Last week, I met the 62nd person to through hike the Ice Age Trail. He and I were at the same shelter in Shenandoah National Park. Oh, and he's from Idaho.
Oh, interesting.
It was like, what? But he's from Idaho and he threw hiked the whole trail. And it's not an easy trail. It's like the Buckeye Trail here in Ohio where it's almost developed, but there's a lot of connecting routes, they call it, or road walking. And so it isn't totally a trail. There's some logistics involved to actually get you from one part of the trail to the next. The Ice Age Trail is really kind of cool. And I definitely would recommend this, except for not everybody go there, please. But it follows and traces the lines of where the glacier activity was. And there'll actually be signs saying, here's a moraine, here's a kettle. And it'll explain what it is, how it was created. And I'm going to forget the name of it. The Native Americans used to bend trees over, and they were like direction pointers. And so you can actually walk along, and there'll be trees that are bent over in a, not a Z shape, but I guess a Z shape if you turn the Z on its side, where they tie it over so it grows crooked, and that's the direction pointing towards water or towards camp, whatever they're trying to point to. And the trail goes right past those as well. It's a step way back in history. It's really neat. And they have communities that are very supportive of the Ice Age Trail as well. It's a really nice environment, except they have mosquitoes there. Other than that, it's a great trail.
And one thing was that I was surprised with Wisconsin is you guys had some really cool rock formations in and around the Ice Age Trail that's carved out by those glaciers, right?
Oh, yeah. The kind of thing that's nice about that, you get the rock formations, but the trails are still, for the most part, dirt. It isn't like going through Pennsylvania on the Appalachian Trail. We say, oh, look at these cool rock formations, and we're going to walk on rocks for the next 6 miles. So it's not bad at all that way. It's kind of a positive.
Going abroad, you got to do the King's Trail. Oh, how's that experience?
That was a life-changing. And you can't see here, but on my other monitor, there's a picture of me and a friend of mine, Bao from Vietnam, that he and I met on the trail, and somebody took a picture and it happened to pop up. It's just fantastic. Life-changing. It's about 300 miles. For the most part, you're above tree line. So it isn't a really good place if you use a hammock. There's not a lot of trees to tie up to. There are some, because you do have to go down to do water crossings and go back up to go back up above tree line. So there are places you can do that, but you can go 2 days or something like that easily above tree line. And the views are magnificent. The sun, you can only hike it between middle of June and maybe middle of September. Middle of June, the start date is because of the reindeer. They don't want anybody in the mountains during calving season because the reindeer get spooked and run and they'll abandon their calves. So you don't want to be out there. The reindeer are domesticated. I mean, they're being herded by somebody. They roam wild, but they actually, they're somebody's reindeer. And so you don't want to hurt the local economy. And it's not good for the reindeer. Yeah. And then in September, you start getting bad weather. So that's kind of the other end of it. And things start shutting down because of that. So it's really kind of cool thing is the sun, while you can hike it during that window, or you can also do it in the wintertime on skis. Just for the actual backpacking, though, it's in the summer. The sun, like on June 21st, doesn't set. I happened to do it back in August. So it would come up in the north-northeast and then set in the north-northwest. And it never went down far enough that it got dark in the tent. I took along a headlamp, didn't use it one time, didn't even have to use my phone as a headlamp. If I woke up in the middle of the night, I could see. There's tons of water. A lot of people on the King's Trail, they take a wooden cup. Mm-hmm. It's a special design cup, but people bring plastic ones and stuff too. But there's a traditional cup. And if you're thirsty, you just dip it in the water and drink. You're so far away from people and pollution, you can just drink the water. And there's plenty of water everywhere.
Okay.
And in fact, maybe there's a little bit too much in some places. You can find pools of water that it's like, do I have to deal with this again? And there, you have to step on rocks and logs. And sometimes there are none and your feet get wet. But the views are just fantastic. I mean, you're looking at views 20, 30 miles away. Just beautiful, beautiful mountains. When I got home, I decided I'd write a book on it. So I actually wrote a book and put it on Amazon for John's Dad Hikes the King's Trail. It's a combination of, it's a checklist. If you want to hike the King's Trail, follow this checklist. And I give all the information, the background information you'd need to make a decision on what you're going to do. And then the second half is here's how, the traditional maybe day-to-day. Here's what I hiked. Here's where I met. Here's the view I got. Here's the picture of the bridge we went across. Here's the food we ate. And the food was actually pretty good. And they have huts. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think you were going to talk about it. I was going to ask that M, our previous guest from a bonus episode, she was talking about these hut structures mm-hmm. along the trail that you could sleep in. Did you get a chance to do that?
I did. I brought a tent. There is a stretch between Amarnes and Kvikkjokk, and I know you don't know where those are, but it's maybe it's 50, 60 miles where there are no huts. But everywhere else, there's a hut, let's say every 10 miles. It's not exactly 10, might be a little bit shorter, might be longer. And you can stay in those or you can tent near them. And they have a room inside that's heated, and they have big, huge propane tanks so you can cook on their stoves. There's water that you can go get out of a stream. There's no faucets and no electricity. Get a bucket full of water and boil up your food for your instant potatoes or whatever you're going to have. About every other one of those actually has a little store in it. So really? you can plan it out. And I made the mistake of not doing this. I sent myself resupply boxes and carried a week of food every time. Every other day, you can stop at one of these cabins and spend some money. It's going to be expensive, but you get the traditional freeze-dried meals you'd expect here. Sometimes a different brand that we don't have in the States, but it's all real good. And they got candy bars and crackers and potatoes and beans, anything you'd actually want. And so then you only need to carry maybe 2 days worth of food. And it's a lot lighter, but they do supply those huts with snowmobiles and helicopters. There's no road out there. I crossed 3-4 roads in 300 miles.
Wow.
There's no place to drive a truck out there or a van or even a four-wheeler in most cases. So you're going to pay extra for the food and whatever else you buy out there, but it's delivered by helicopter. So you kind of accept that. They do have those are mountain cabins. They do have mountain stations. And those are, I'm not going to call them a resort because they're not. But they have electricity. They have a sauna. They have a washing machine. They have a restaurant. Where they actually make real food and you can buy food off of a menu. And so that's where you charge up your electronics. That's where I had my resupply boxes sent. They're just absolutely beautiful. I can't wait to go back. It's just so cool. I met nice people the whole way.
You know, the last one I wanted to get your experience on, Bob, was Dolly Sods, because our friend Bort from Australia, who's now back in the States, that left a memorable impression on him. He put it up there as one of the great outdoor spaces that he was able to see when he was living here previously.
I was just in Dolly Sods. I was home from Dolly Sods 2 days and then went and did a week on the Appalachian Trail and just got home on Saturday from that. So about 2 weeks ago, I was in Dolly Sods. It was actually my first time there. Our scout troop has gone there several times, but I just never happened to go on the trips with them. Went there with a friend of mine who's moving out of town. So we thought, let's get in one more backpacking trip. And it is beautiful there. There's water you can filter. It is red. One of the creeks is Red Creek. So there's iron in the water, but there's plenty of water. There's signs at all the trail intersections. And we got up there for a sunset at Lion's Head, where you go out on this peak. There's a lot of places like this, different trails, where it's a bald area and you go out there and you see sunset, sunrise. And so we got out there. It was absolutely beautiful. You could see forever. And there is a rock formation that from the side looks like a lion's head. It made sense.
I always have a hard time with those rock formations that are supposed to look like it. In Hawaii, there's one called Crouching Lion. And it's one of those like 3D pictures that you're supposed to like cross your eyes and then I tried crossing my eyes and I could never see the crouching lion.
No, this wasn't a perfect lion that looks like somebody sculpted it, but you look and say, okay, yeah, that's a lion's head. Yeah, it counts. Okay. Yep. Real easy to find. One of the things that I don't like, if you go someplace and you drive for 6 hours on a country road, well, I'd rather drive expressway and get off and drive 3 miles on a country road. And this was like that. Got off the expressway, boom, and we were at the trailhead and we're hiking real short after that. And no, I would definitely put Dolly Sods in the list of places to go.
Yeah, definitely added it to my bucket list.
It's a long way from the Pacific Northwest, but okay.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Now, outside of the United States, you've been to some amazing places abroad. But one of the things we like to do here on the podcast is kind of do like a deep dive on our guests, either Instagram, YouTube channel, or website. And the one thing that caught my attention from your YouTube channel was, and I think it's on your Instagram feed as well, but you had a memorable hiking experience and backpacking experience in Indonesia that involved a volcano.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did have some great plans to hike Mount Agun. It was a 4-day trip and I had to bring almost everything. It was just a guide, but I had to bring everything from here to Indonesia to do this hike. And then just a few days before I left, it erupted. And for some reason, they decided that maybe we shouldn't go backpacking and camping for 4 days on an exploding an erupting volcano. So I did have to change my plans, and I could just figure out a day thing on Mount Batur. And that was really beautiful. They picked us up at 2 a.m, drove us out there, and we hiked up in the dark. I had my headlamp on red, and I had my hiking poles and everything, but you couldn't see anything, and hiked up there and got up there half an hour sort before sunrise. And the concert warning was, keep moving. Because if you didn't keep moving, the wild monkeys would come and attack you, and because they knew you had food in your backpack.
Oh, no kidding.
You had to keep moving, and you could see the people who stopped within 30 seconds, they had the monkeys' attention. And it was just beautiful. I'm not a photographer. I mean, I take pictures, but I can't take wonderful pictures, but I got some great pictures. It was just so naturally beautiful. And the sun coming up, and we were above the cloud layer, of course, so all the lights were reflecting everywhere. And there were some people there with drones, and I thought, I really wasn't interested in drones, but they got some good pictures. I know they did. It was just so beautiful. And then walking back down, we got to see every place. And I actually fell on my hiking pole and broke it. And I don't think I have any scars, but I sliced up my forearm. Blood everywhere. When we got to a place where it was a good place to stop, they knew exactly what to do. There was three guides with our group, and they came over with a bottle of water, and they cleaned it off, and they opened up the bandage. And I'm a big leave no trace person. I'm picking up trash. Any place I go, I'll put it right in my backpack pocket. They opened up this big padded bandage, and everything except for the bandage got thrown to the wind. And it's like, no, what? So I decided, no, they're helping me to stop bleeding here. I'm not going to argue leave no trace principles. But it really was kind of surprising that all this plastic and paper just got discarded. So, but then I turned out okay. I stopped bleeding and I was fine. Then my pictures turned out great. It was really beautiful. What an experience that was.
Switching gears to another incredible experience that you had recently was an amazing trip up to Alaska, where you got a backpack, you got a hike, you got to do a helicopter experience. Can you share a little bit about that trip?
It was so awesome. Just, I mean, unbelievably awesome. Alaska's been on my bucket list for a long time, and then COVID came along and it kept getting deferred. So finally, we said, we got to do this. And it's a little bit more complicated than just a backpacking trip. My son and I do a lot of backpacking together. So he and I went up to Anchorage first, met our guide from, the company was Backpack Alaska. And Catherine is the owner and she was our guide. Totally, totally competent. She knows what she's doing. And she kept telling us all miles aren't made the same. Because I'm saying, hey, we can go 10 miles at least, 15. All miles aren't the same. Okay. She just, you know, she doesn't know us. Well, it turns out all miles aren't the same. And we had trouble doing 5 miles. That was a full day effort sometimes. The terrain was very tough, not for steep up and down. There's some up and down, but not the steep. It was actually the terrain. We're walking on bushes. There was no trail. We were totally backcountry. So John's dad, son and I, my son and I, we adjusted our expectations way down and loved it. We saw 9 grizzlies. Every time we saw them, Catherine, the guide, would make noises and stuff, and they would hear us, and they would run. And I was totally surprised at that, because I'm thinking, uh-oh, there's grizzlies. We're going to get eaten up. Mm-hmm. But the proper behavior from the grizzlies out there is that they're afraid of us. They don't know the human voice. They don't know humans, because it's not like on the Appalachian Trail where they see humans all the time.
Yeah.
So they should be afraid. And they took off running. And it was great. You could see them run up all the way up over a hill. They would run the whole way up and be gone because they were so scared. And that was great. And you'd see their scat every place. So you knew that they were there. So like you said, we flew out on float planes, and it was a rainy day and cloudy and bad visibility. I'm a pilot, so I was real nervous about I would never have flown in those conditions. I'm not qualified to do that. But our pilot that flew us out, he knew what he was doing. I could tell. I mean, I watched his procedures and decision making, and we delayed and delayed and delayed. He said, now we can go now. And he took us off and flew below the clouds and above the ground and next to mountains, dropped me right down in the lake. It was 2 trips. So my son and the guide went out first and I came out second, dropped us right down, you know, same place. And then we hiked for a week. And then they came and got us in a helicopter. And the helicopter ride was a beautiful, clear sky. It's just beautiful. And so the whole way in, we were flying towards Denali. But that wasn't a good thing. 4 mornings in a row leading up to that, all 4, we woke up. We had Denali right there. And people go to Alaska wanting to see Denali, and only 30% see it. And we saw it 4 camping mornings in the morning, and then for a whole half-hour helicopter ride in. Just awesome.
Oh,
there's caribou everywhere. What you can do, I'll try to describe this. The caribou aren't real bright. And the caribou, by the way, are the same thing as reindeer, except reindeer are domesticated. They're the same animal. So the caribou are there. If you take your hiking poles and make a V and put them up like they're antlers, the caribou immediately say, oh, those are some other caribous. Let's go over and say hi. And they start wandering over, and they'll come within now maybe 30, 40 yards, kind of like, yeah, you look like a caribou, but I don't know what that backpack thing is. And so we would just stand there for like 20 minutes and let the caribou get used to us and wander over and kind of check us out. And they never got up where, you know, they're really super close, but we could actually see them, and it was just awesome. Just awesome. Yeah. And the food that Catherine gave us was she cooked the breakfast and the dinner, and the food was fantastic. Just like there's a pasta thing with chili powder in it and a Parmesan cheese stuff with some other couscous stuff. And I don't know everything we ate, but it was super good. I couldn't believe it. Then lunch and snacks were just a series of different bars. The only negative thing for the whole week, only 1 package of peanut M&Ms. that was my biggest complaint about the whole thing. I could have used more peanut M&Ms. And you know, as a parent, you know, the Kungsleden or King's Trail I did by myself. You know, I did hike with some, I met friends and I hiked with other people, but I did that by myself. Being out there as a parent and with, I call him John's dad's son. My trail name is John's dad. He's John's dad's son as a trail name. My son was there, and he was seeing the mountains, and he was seeing the bear, and he was seeing the caribou, and he was struggling with the terrain. And it's just so cool as a parent to be there with your kid. And he's 25, so he's not a kid anymore. But it was just so awesome that, you know, we could do that together. And I'm thinking, oh, he's 25. This will be, you know, the last time. And it almost brought me to tears as we're getting ready, we're planning. He says, well, for our next trip, you're like, oh, man, so cool. So that wasn't our last trip together yet.
So I got to ask, has the next trip been planned?
Not with John and me, no, because I'm retired. He's got to work for a living. We'd have to figure that one out. So just today, I started looking at going to the ice hotel in northern Sweden, which would be a day hike situation, not a true backpacking trip, because we would have to go there in the winter to see the ice hotel, because that's when the ice hotel is, because it's frozen, and we want to see the northern lights. So that's the next big one we're looking at. But I got two more trips planned for this fall. The Scouts are going to do the Virginia Triple Crown. It's Dragon's Tooth, McAfee Knob, and Tinker Cliffs. We're going to do a 4-day weekend in October. My AT hiking group, our 3-day week trip this fall is going to be to Laurel Highlands in Western Pennsylvania. And the winter, I don't know, it's that 1-day thing. We kind of planned that about 3-4 weeks in advance. And for some reason, that one isn't as well attended as a summer trip. I don't know. Next summer, we'll do another week on the Appalachian Trail for sure. Yeah, just don't know which section yet. We'll decide that and usually in January.
You've made it up to my neck of the woods, Bob, the Pacific Northwest, both in Oregon and Washington. You got a chance to explore both Mount Rainier and Crater Lake National Parks. How was your visit up to the Pacific Northwest, and what are some of the trails you got to explore?
That was just wonderful. After the backpacking trip, we took a cruise down to Vancouver and then Seattle and then rented a car, went to Mount Rainier. And I used to live on Fort Lewis. I don't know. It's not called that now. My dad was called up during the Berlin crisis back in the early 60s. So I lived there. We went out to Mount Rainier then. And I remember the huge snow, because we must have been there in the wintertime. Huge snow machines and piles of snow from Wisconsin. I had seen snow. So I wanted to always go back and went in the summer. And that was so cool. We did a little bit of the Wonderland Trail. I'm not going to say that I actually hiked it. I mean, didn't do enough for that to count. But just did some day hikes on the local trails around Mount Rainier. And luckily got some good pictures of the peak, but it was totally clear and kind of a mystery one where maybe just the peak is showing through some clouds. I'm not a photographer, but I really lucked out in some good pictures there. And of course, we had great weather. You know, just totally lucked out. So then went from there down, and I hiked across the Bridge of the Gods. I've wanted to do that for years. And so we did a little section of the Pacific Crest Trail so I could go across there and get some pictures. And that was cool, too. You see that in everybody's videos on the PCT. Mm-hmm. So now I've been there, too. And then a friend of mine that hiked part of the King's Trail with me. I know I said I hiked it alone, but the first week, my Swedish nephew hiked it with me. And then he had to go back to work. He's not retired either. He's Swedish. He married an American, moved to Oregon.
Oh, no
so
kidding.
And they lived down just a little bit south of Crater Lake. So I went down and I got to meet his wife and their kid. And I think he's about 10. So we went up to Crater Lake and, of course, did all the trails around Crater Lake. It's so beautiful. I mean, the water is deep and pure. So the water is really blue. That's why it gets its blue color. That wasn't me and doing some magic with filters. You take a picture and it's beautiful there.
Yeah.
And so then we also went and got on the PCT and just did a out and back. And I got to show James how to use a compass. He had never used a compass before. And I told him about Red Fred and the shed and how to point the direction of travel arrow where we want to go and all that stuff. And then later on, had him do it again because I needed some help figuring this out. Now, of course, I probably didn't, but, you know, he helped me out. And so they got to hike along the PCT, got a little feeling of that, came across the water cache with probably 30 10-gallon jugs of water. And so we talked about the water situation on the PCT. And so it was a lot of learning for everybody. And only two of us were really backpackers. The rest of us were, you know, kind of first-time day hikers almost. We just really lucked out with the weather. It was beautiful. It wasn't too warm. It was really beautiful.
One thing that I'm excited to talk to you about, because I'm still trying to dial my backpacking meals. I just started backpacking this year, and my biggest struggle is finding a balance between the weight and the taste. Do you have any tips that you can share with me and the listeners on maybe some do-it-yourself backpacking meals or even some recipes that you would recommend?
One of the things I got dialed in is my equipment, my procedures. All of that, I'm totally dialed in. I'm really happy with it. Based on the trip, I know what different piece of equipment to bring, a different air mattress, different sleeping bag, maybe a different mix of tent stakes. The food is a mess. From a three-day trip to Dali Sads, I came home with over a pound of food. And the only reason I didn't come back from with more food than that from Shenandoah was because I gave away everything except for my breakfast and lunch for the next day and the last night. So I don't have my food dialed in, but I do like spicy food. So I dehydrate jalapenos, and I put that into anything that's pasta or potato. And I also like red peppers. So you can get the crushed red peppers from the pizza restaurant, and you can also sprinkle that in anything that's pasta or potatoes. That's how I make the food taste good. And I need to bring more salt and pepper. I realized that in Dali Sads, that would have, because my friend had salt and pepper. It's like, oh yeah, that would be good. And it added and it tasted good. I got a dehydrator a few years ago, and to actually start out, I would do some fruit leather, just some applesauce and throw a little bit of honey in there. And you throw, you can use either applesauce or real apples. Put it in a blender, throw in a little bit of honey for flavor and for sweetness and energy, and some cinnamon. And just start with that. Wow. And the fruit leather packs real easy because it's flat. You can put it almost anywhere. But you can take like chili. One time that I came home after work and my wife had made chili. So I had some. I thought, this is good. Boom. I threw a couple of big spoonfuls on the dehydrator and just rehydrate it when you get to camp. It takes 10, 15 minutes with some hot water. And it was good at home, and it was good in the field.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of spicy food too, and that's the. I think there was one Pad Thai meal that I tried that had sriracha powder and a lime powder, and that definitely gave it flavor, and that's what I was looking for. But everything else that I've bought that's commercially made, there's not much flavor. But I think maybe packing in some like salt and pepper, and I love the idea of dehydrated jalapenos. Give it a little bit of a kick and some more flavor, I think would do it good.
One thing I found that I really like at Pine Grove Furnace State Park, and that's where they do the half gallon challenge on the AT, they had packets of Velveeta jalapeno cheese sauce. Now it's real heavy. It's 300 calories, but it's Velveeta cheese sauce. Just, you know, it's a squeeze, you know, just like cheese sauce. And, but it's got jalapenos in it. Now you dump that into anything that's pasta or instant potatoes. Oh man, I am in heaven when I have that stuff. I get the cheese or the processed cheese product or whatever it really is. But I get the cheese because I'm from Wisconsin. I love cheese. And put that in with the potatoes and maybe some, I will dehydrate shredded chicken from a can and throw that in there. So you get some protein into the potatoes. 10, 15 minutes later, you're having a cheesy potato dinner. Like, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
It's 8:30 at night my time, but I want to have dinner again.
That sounds better than any of the meals I've had recently on the Enchantments. I'm going to have to steal that recipe from you. Now, Bob, you have, and you mentioned it, your trail name is John's Dad. And I'm always interested in hearing the story behind the trail name. But how did the name kind of come about?
It's pretty straightforward, almost. The scouts didn't know my name, but they knew I was John's dad. And they know who Joe's dad was and who Colin's dad was and Eric's dad. And I kind of liked being John's dad. That's who I've been for 25 years. And it's a pretty good reflection of my priorities and my life and what I've been doing. And so I kind of just accepted that as a trail name. My son got introduced once as, this is John's dad's son. And nobody thought it was strange because I'm John's dad.
Yeah.
And about 10 seconds, 15 seconds into it, people started hearing what had just been said and realized that, yeah, why don't we just call him John? And so he decided that was the perfect trail name for him, that he's John's dad's son.
I like it.
And I do have only one son, so there isn't a jealousy. I don't have any daughters to worry about it that way.
One of the questions I always like to ask day hikers and backpackers is if there's any regular routines that they do on or off the trails, whether it's packing a favorite snack or meal, maybe it's some trail beverages once you reach camp or the summit, or even just a moment of zen. Is there something that you like to do?
Oh, sure. I always pack Diet Mountain Dews and leave them in the car. Leave them in if there's a pack, you know, we're clean clothes for the trip home. There's Diet Mountain Dew in there. Even in Alaska, I kept talking with the guy that I have a Diet Mountain Dew. And the van picked us up from the airport, dropped us she arranged a really great little cabin for us for that last night. And, you know, 30 seconds later, I'm drinking my Diet Mountain Dew. And I've been talking about it for a week. So, yeah, I packed it with me.
Nice.
With the AT group, we've got a routine that, and we decided this the first year, and I think it was a good call, that the last night we sleep in a hostel, everybody gets a good night's sleep, and in the morning we all drive home. We don't get to the end, to the cars, and then we're driving home and getting home at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
that's just not a good move. So one thing we do is we always go out for dinner together, and that's our thing. And it used to always be a Mexican restaurant, but we started having trouble finding them near where we ended. So now it's just a restaurant.
Okay.
And well, guys will have a beer or two. We're not a big drinking group. It's all originated in Scouts with all of the oath and the laws. And so we're all pretty, I don't know, kind of square group. And so that's one of the things we do. That's our tradition. It's kind of a bonding thing, talking about the trip. We don't hike together.
Oh, okay.
We camp together. In Boy Scouts, you'd hike as a patrol. You got a person designated at the front, a person at the end, and you do not separate. But mm-hmm. we're all adults. And in the times where somebody's not an adult, they're 16, 17, they're totally fine on handling themselves, and they can navigate the Appalachian Trail. Yeah. So we don't hike together. So we see each other in the morning, maybe, and then maybe at dinner, we'll sit around and talk. So it's a real good time for us to sit and just catch up. And what did you like? Did you like that waterfall? And did you get any good pictures of this or that? It's a friend group. And it just, you couldn't create one of these things if you tried to. So it just, this group of people, we just came together. It's just been fantastic. And so that's, at the end, we have to sit and be a group again.
I like that. That's a great tradition to have. Now, Bob, when it comes to your pack list, is there any luxury items that you tend to pack on a regular basis?
Quite often, we'll take an inflatable pillow. On a longer trip, I'll use my clothes bag.
Yeah.
One thing I picked up about 6 months ago is one of these Flextail air mattress pumps. It weighs a couple ounces, and I got it to deflate the air mattress because I figured out what I want to get up and get going in the morning. I don't have breakfast until I'm an hour down the trail. I'm going to get up, get going. And the thing that slows me down the most is deflating my air mattress. So I thought, I'll get one of these Flextail pumps, run it in reverse. Like it, you know, you can inflate or deflate, and it's designed to do both. But it doesn't work with the lightweight air mattresses because it sucks the air from near the nozzle and creates a vacuum at the nozzle, and there's still air in the air mattress. And so it doesn't work for what I wanted it, but still connect it, blows it up. I don't know, maybe it takes less than a minute to blow up the air mattress, and I'm not out of breath and lightheaded. So I'll take that almost every time now, just to save that hassle.
Now, you know, for me being so new to backpacking, and I know there's other people that are interested in making that transition from day hikers to backpackers. Do you have any tips or advice that you could give those individuals that are interested in getting into backpacking?
Oh, for sure. See, every year with the scout troop, we have new people joining the troop that have no experience and they're 11 years old. So what we'll do is we'll intentionally create trips that will be successes. We don't put these new people on a 10-mile hike with a full backpack. We'll hike in 1 mile or half a mile because we know the different places around here where we can go. We say, okay, this is the backpacking trip with some new kids. We'll hike in that quarter mile, set up camp, teach them how to start a fire, how to hang a bear bag, all of the things you need to learn to be backpacking, all the skills. And then the next day, we'll just take empty packs or just day packs and do a shorter hike, maybe 6 miles. And then they come back and they've had fun all day. It hasn't been a death march. And I'd recommend that for anybody getting into it. Set yourself up for success. And then when you get done, you say, oh, I could have done more. Okay, next time do more. But keep it real simple, real short. Instead of a loop, we'll do quite often a loop because we know the trails. Yeah. Just, I'm going to hike outbound for an hour, take a break, turn around and come back. You can decide how far you're going to hike just by doing an out and a back.
Solid tips and advice, Bob. Well, that was it for the regular questions, Bob. This next section of the podcast are this or that questions. I'm going to give you two hiking-related topics, and you just choose which one you personally enjoy out of the two. So the first one is ascending or descending?
Absolutely ascending. My knees hurt way too much. I've got an artificial right knee, and going downhill is not what I prefer to do.
And when it comes to waterfalls or summits, do you have a preference?
I'm into water, so it's the waterfalls.
When it comes to the trails, do you prefer switchbacks or going straight up?
Absolutely switchbacks. Yeah.
And are you team trek poles or do you hike freehand?
I would buy brand new trekking poles if I forgot them. I absolutely wouldn't even think about doing it without trekking poles.
And then when it comes to your footwear, Do you wear trail runners or are you wearing hiking boots?
I tried some Lone Peak, Ultra Lone Peak trail runners, which were fine, but I prefer the boots.
And then another trail system question, loop trail or an out and back trail?
I like the loop because you see more, just rather than out and back. And technically, you know, the out and back, the trail coming back is a different trail. But I do prefer the loops.
And then when it does come to bodies of water that you come across, do you jump in or stay dry, especially on a hot summer day?
I stay dry, but I'm rethinking that position. On the King's Trail, the Swedes tended to be very clean. You didn't have stinky hikers on the King's Trail. They just didn't exist, not like you'd have everywhere else. And that was because they did jump in. And the water was 33 degrees. It just melted off a glacier about 200 yards up, you know, so it's cold. But they jumped in, and I'm rethinking that position, though I haven't acted on it yet.
Now, this one's always a tough one, Bob, but sunsets or sunrises?
Not a tough one, sunrises. Mm-hmm. I'm up, and the sun comes up after I do, usually.
And I know Wisconsin and Ohio have both of these, but this one's also another tough one for guests. But spring wildflowers or fall colors?
Fall colors. Absolutely. And part of that is that the leaves start falling off as well, and they get better views.
And then the last one is about social media. Do you tag a hike or do you not tag a hike?
I absolutely tag it. And someday, if my little tag makes a difference, I might have to rethink that. But no, that's right now. It's here's where I was and the date, and here's the trailhead, and this is what it was like. So it gives the next person all kinds of detailed information, whatever they might need.
Well, that was it, Bob, for the this or that questions. If folks want to follow your adventures and see some of your previous adventures, what are some of the spaces online that they could find you at?
But on Instagram, I'm at John's Dad Hikes, and it's John, J-O-N. My son's name is Jonathan. So it's John, J-O-N, John's Dad Hikes. And on YouTube, it's the same thing. It's at John's Dad Hikes.
And we'll be sure to link both of those in the episode show notes so people can check out the videos from your previous hikes and see some of the upcoming hikes that you'll be doing in the coming months in 2024.
Well, I'm open to whatever. If people have questions, that kind of thing, I'd be totally open to trying to help anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Bob. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing your experiences. Had a really great time chatting.
Oh, thank you too.
And that brings us to the end of this episode alongside Bob. We extend a heartfelt thanks to him for coming on the podcast. Make sure to stay connected and follow his upcoming adventures on Instagram at John's Dad Hikes. That's JonsDadHikes. Be sure to also check out the episode show notes to check out John's Dad's videos and books. We have an incredible lineup of episodes planned throughout the fall, and we can't wait to share them with you. New episodes will be dropping every Monday with occasional bonus episodes on Fridays. To ensure you never miss out on those thrilling tales, remember to hit that like and subscribe button. Your support means the world to us. Don't forget to join our vibrant community on Instagram at Hikes and Mikes. We'll be sharing episode visuals, my own personal hiking content, and so much more. Let's stay connected and continue to inspire each other on this remarkable journey. As we bid farewell, remember to tread those happy trails, embrace the great outdoors, and keep the spirit of adventure alive. Until next time, my fellow explorers, happy hiking. This episode's music was created by Ketsa. Follow him on Instagram at Ketsa Music. This episode is brought to you by Flip Socks. Whether you're on the trail, on the job, or in the yard, Flip Socks will keep Mother Nature out of your boots with their innovative nylon sleeve. You no longer need to worry about any annoying debris getting trapped in your boots during your hikes. Simply flip down the nylon sleeve over any boot to prevent Mother Nature from finding its way inside, keeping your feet comfortable all day long. To get your first pair, visit flipsockswithaz.com and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for listeners who use the promo code at checkout, I'll be donating 100% of the Season 2 promo code proceeds to Big City Mountaineers, who provide transformative experiences through connections to nature that strengthen life skills and build community for youth and disinvested communities across the nation. So if you're tired of bits and pieces of the trail finding its way into your hiking boots, pick up a pair of Flip Socks today with the promo code HikesMikes10 to get 10% off. For website and promo code, see the episode description.